Good morning. In for Andrew Carter, Ken Connors, CJAD 800.
710, nice to have you here with us this morning. Well, people living in the Los Angeles area, LA County, who are rushing to flee the wildfires, obviously faced a lot of challenges and decisions. One of them was whether or not to abandon their car to the fire. So even if residents were quick in responding to evacuation orders, when they tried to leave their homes, they couldn't get very far. Many roads and highways quickly became gridlocked. There's new research analyzing street connectivity and the role it's playing in these California wildfires. Chris Barrington Lee is a professor with McGill's Beeler School of Environment and is on the line. Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
Of the many staggering images that we've seen coming out of California in these wildfires, one of them is the sight of bulldozers being used to just sort of push and clear all these vehicles out of these gridlock roads to make way for, to ease evacuation and to make way for emergency vehicles. It's a definite problem. When I talk about street sprawl, how would you define that?
That's a term that we probably coined ourselves. And we think about very local street connectivity. So for us, the worst kind of street sprawl looks like neighborhoods that are really just a bunch of windy cul-de-sacs and, you know, freeway intersections and so on. And what's critical about these, especially from our original interest, is that it really locks car dependency in. So when you build street networks initially like this, it's very hard to ever turn such neighborhoods into places where people can get around by foot or by bike. So the first problem that led to, in particular, the famous and tragic example that you mentioned is car dependency itself. So those people, their way to get out of away from their homes, their only choice was by car.
Chris, with such devastation and these neighborhoods being flattened, which is tragic, is this an opportunity to correct the situation now in the rebuild?
Well, our original interest in this was really from a really long-term considerations. We were interested in the outcomes. Some of the reasons that we care about urban form, this kind of feature, is to do with climate emissions, as well as all kinds of other things like health and energy use and so on. But the reason that we realized that the street network itself is such a critical policy lever, such a critical opportunity when you initially develop an area residentially, is that you cannot change it. So let me give you a couple of answers, but the first one really is, well, you can't change a street network. And in fact, you might say, well, these fires are an opportunity because in the places where everything is really raised to the ground, surely you can start over.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, even in tragedies like this, the streets get put back exactly where they were. So we realized this years ago because of a couple of examples, the Great Fire of London in 1666 and the Great Fire in San Francisco after the 1906 earthquake.
Right.
In both cases, they started from scratch from large areas of town, and the streets went back. Why do the streets go back? Well, it's because you've got all these people who still own the plot of land. And so you can't coordinate everybody to redesign because you'd all have to renegotiate who owns which piece of land. So it's really hard to change once you've cemented these street networks in place. And so the important lesson for policy is the opportunity is where you're building afresh. Now, the slightly more optimistic answer would be you can sometimes build rights of way through cul-de-sacs so that people can walk and cycle, but you can imagine that's still difficult in terms of negotiating or paying property owners if you're making changes. And the other answer is, and it may not help in emergencies like earthquakes or fires, but there are other things that we do to try and make our neighborhoods walkable. And in the cases of these kind of neighborhoods, we're fighting against the street network, but we can still try to change zoning laws about what kind of mixture of buildings and land uses get put there and also put transit in. But it's hard to change. It's really something, and in fact, our initial focus or our recent focus in our work has been global. So if you go to sprawlmap.org, you find a map, interactive map of street connectivity for every intersection and street segment in the world.
Oh my goodness!
Because we think this is extremely important for the places that are still fast growing, where there's still an opportunity to build residential street networks the right way.
Did you say sprawlmap.org?
Yes, that's it.
All right. Chris, just before I let you go, we're up against the clock. I don't know if this is a fair question. How does Montreal kind of stack up when it comes to street connectivity? What kind of a rating would you give the city in terms of our infrastructure?
Well, if you look at the core, it's one of the easiest places to get around, certainly in North America, you'll ever find. If you look towards the suburbs, you find much more of low connectivity. It'll be red, brighter red colors in that map when you zoom in. Mm. And you know, we don't usually think of urban fires, and especially like the one ones in LA are unlikely to spread the way they have without extreme winds.
Mm-hmm.
But there are areas where in the suburbs around Montreal where you see some of these street networks that. You know, as I said, on one hand, they are promoting car dependence. On the other, it compounds the problem. You get these areas that only have one way out because of the connectivity.
Mm.
And so you get these natural choke points if people do need to evacuate.
Mm. Fascinating topic. Professor Chris Barrington-Lee with the Buehler School of Environment at McGill University. Thank you so much for sharing your insight on this. I appreciate your time.
Pleasure.